Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, November the 14th. I'm Brian Shields. Today's program, it's all about birds. In the studio with us, Rich Guthrie and Tom Lake. They're here to answer all your viewer questions about those winged creatures. The number to call is 800-348-2551. It's 800-348-2551. Email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. Other ways as well to get in touch with us electronically, and we'll go down that list right after the break. Rich and Tom, the birds today. Questions are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in program. I'm Brian Shields. Today it's all about birds on the program. Our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, today is joined by Tom Lake. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. Tom is a consulting naturalist for NCON's Hudson River Estuary Program and editor of DEC's Hudson River Almanac. It's all about birds today. The number to call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. And we have a live studio audience today. Tom Lake's grandson, Tommy Jackson, is here. Tommy is a third grader and a big fan of the bald eagle. And after all, who isn't? I love bald eagles, too. Thank you for joining us today on the program, 800-348-2551. Rich and Tom, it really got cold pretty quickly. What happens to the birds, the guys that don't head south?
They're still here.
Yeah.
And they basically have got to turn with the seasons as we do. And some of them escape the real winter that's coming up. Up north of us. So this is kind of their Miami for the time being.
Is it you who told me that robins do not head south?
Many of them do. Many do. But yeah, a lot don't. And again, some of these robins that we have around through the winter are those that came down from Canada and will be here for the winter. So it's a mix. It's kind of like some exit town, some come into town.
So what do they do when it's 30 below and covered with snow? Where do they go?
They hunker down, and they also change their diet. The winter robins around here will feast on wild berries, the berries that are left on the vine, and because there's darn few insects left around for them.
800-348-2551.
Yeah, we have hawk watches in the Hudson Valley, and in addition to the raptors that are heading south and vultures, almost every day they're counting hundreds of robins that are leaving. Those are probably our robins, as Rich was saying, and we're getting Quebec robins.
Maybe I'm just not seeing them during the winter, but I always expect to see them in the spring, and I do see them in the spring, but they are there in the winter.
Well, the thing about the winter robins is that they don't behave the same during the winter months. They seek a sheltered area out of the way and travel around in flocks, so they're not hopping around on the lawn like the ones in April and May are doing.
And I guess they can't eat the worms, Tom, because the worms are in the frozen ground.
So the ground gets frozen. Their diet changes, yes.
That's the time to put out the bird feeder?
Won't help the robin any.
No.
But now's the time to plant put the bushes in, the berry-producing bushes for next year.
Why don't robins eat the bird feeder?
They're not into seeds so much. They might, very seldom, might they find some suet or peanut butter. And if they do, you got them hooked. But they have to learn to know it. They'll like it when they find it, but they don't know it. So they're not drawn to it as woodpeckers and nuthatches and chickadees are.
Do they like the crunchy or the creamy peanut butter?
Either or both.
Jif, peanut, you know, any particular brand that they go for?
Any kind you can smear on a tree, which is one of the bird feeding techniques, is you can take peanut butter and just kind of lather it on the bark of a tree, and the woodpeckers will find it.
Mike.
The problem with the peanut is direct squirrels as well. Now you got competitors for the seed.
Mike, go ahead in Saratoga.
Hey, hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a long-term backyard bird feeder guy, and I'm right in downtown Saratoga Springs. And this is the first year I remember, I'm pretty sure getting three different woodpeckers, the hairy, downy, and the red belly, and they've been coming fairly regularly. I just want to know, is it a weird year, and what, if anything, I can do to make sure they keep coming, because it's fun watching them.
Well, the those three woodpeckers are a year-round woodpecker species, as well as the pileated woodpecker. And they're the ones likely to show up at a bird feeder, the hairy, downy, and red-bellied. Now, suet, that's the trick. And the red-belly, interestingly enough, will take bird seed. They'll come down and take crack corn, which they like very much, and also sunflower seed. Yeah. Whereas the other two are not so much likely to be drawn to the bird feeders themselves, but they do like the suet.
Okay, I guess they must have found it this year.
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Rich.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Why do woodpeckers sometimes go for aluminum siding instead of wood? You'll hear it rapping on somebody's house in the suburbs someplace.
That's their song. That's their song. That's their way of communicating their territory, and which is what birds do by
sight. So they don't really have to peck wood. It can be just about anything?
Well, it's all about the sound. They like to make that drumming sound. And if they can find something that drums louder than dead wood, aluminum flashing or a road sign or a gutter will do fine.
What's amazing is when you hear a pileated on a hollow dead tree beating on that, it reverberates. It's an incredible sound. It carries throughout the forest.
And let's talk to Rosemary in Middletown. Rosemary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. A couple of years ago, there was a bird that sang every night at midnight. Mm. And I know it was midnight because I used to check the clock. And it had the most beautiful, beautiful song. Now, a friend told me it was a catbird, but she described that bird song as very irritating. And this was absolutely, it was absolutely beautiful. I'm just wondering if you knew what it was.
Well, I'm going to guess that it was in May or June, and during a bright moonlight night.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
So some birds will sing through the night. The mockingbird is notorious for doing that. And some people find that after a while pretty annoying. If they're sleeping with the window open and you have a mockingbird singing right outside your window, I actually think it's pretty neat. Some of the other birds that will sing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm good. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please go continue.
Yeah, okay. Some of the other birds that sing through the night are birds like the whippoorwill, which says its name over and over and over again, 100 times a minute. And then also some of the sparrows will sing through the night. And then what they seem to be doing is perhaps trying to attract a night-flying migrant mate that may come down. But the mockingbird is the one that's notorious for singing through the night.
And then if the mockingbird is doing its cardinal imitation, you'll really get confused.
Okay. All right. And it has a really pretty song, right, mockingbird?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to – some might not say that. Some of the thrushes will sing well into the night, the wood thrush or the very – whereabouts do you live?
Middletown?
I live in Orange County in Middletown, New York.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm going to guess it's going to be the mockingbird that you have singing down there.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Well, I hope he comes back because I really enjoyed his song.
Well, me too.
Thank you very much. 800-348-2551. Now, Rich, you mentioned the whippoorwill. When I was a kid a long, long time ago, my parents and I, we'd go up to a camp in the Adirondacks near Willsboro. I remember the whippoorwill and the bobwhite. Are they still there?
Well, the whippoorwill is still there in the summer months. The whippoorwill is an iconic bird mainly of the South, but we do have a population here in the North. Many of the northern population have withdrawn. The numbers have decreased dramatically over the last few years. But there is a stronghold of a population in the foothills of the Adirondacks and across that belt of the upstate New York and Massachusetts area.
And the bobwhite?
Bobwhite gone. Yeah. Bobwhite's not native to the area. And they were artificially introduced years ago. They were able to hang on tenaciously, tenuously, but then disappeared through natural selection. They just don't have it to make it through our northern winters.
Yeah, I heard the last time I heard of Bob White was about 15 years ago in Constitution Marsh in Putnam County. For a couple of minutes, it was doing its call, Bob White, and then that was it. And I have not heard one before or since.
800-348-2551. Let's talk to Bruce in Stamford, Vermont. Bruce.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about migration of bluebirds.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any after, like, early, mid-October for the last, I don't know, 8 years I've been living here. And they come in early May, and then they're usually gone by then. The other day, I just happened to look out the window, and there was one on a low dogwood, a lone one, usually they're in pairs. And it was flying down and getting bugs and jumping right up on a low one. Usually they're up on the wires, which is maybe 25 feet in the air. My question is this one that came from up north, or is it one that is on its way out and couldn't make the migration? Because it didn't really fly high.
Well,
all the time I watched it.
Okay,
I'm just curious about their, you know.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not unusual behavior for a bluebird. Bluebirds are sort of, you might call them pounce hunters. They sit on a branch with a good view or a wire overhead, and wait for something underneath, and then they'll drop down and snag it.
Yeah.
And the bluebirds in this area, some of them, like with the robins, some of them will migrate south, but many of them will stick around. So I'm going to suggest that bird that you had there is a local bird. It's okay. It has no strong inclination to migrate, and many of them stick around through the winter. So, and that's what they do. They sit on a branch waiting for the insects below to move around, and then they'll grab. And then during the winter, they, like the robins, will feed on berries and the like.
Well, it's funny because there was a robin maybe 10 feet from it, but what do they eat in the winter? Is there anything we can put out if this one stays?
Well, there's a couple of things. Suet, once again, if you crumble suet, but they have to find it. They have to know to find it. You can put suet out on a platform feeder, and if they locate it, then they're going to be your best friend and yours theirs for the winter. The other possibility, and this is a stretch, but it works very well, is mealworms.
If you get, okay, I've heard that before.
Yep. If you could get a hold of some mealworms and get present them out there for the bluebirds, they'll love you.
Well, we have a silver maple, and they come here because they can go behind the bark and hide from the red-tailed hawks.
Well, they learn quickly to do that.
Well, thank you for calling. 800-348-2551. Birds on Vox Pop. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Copper Sea Distillery, New Paltz, New York, a farm-to-glass distillery featuring heritage method distilling in New York's Hudson Valley, providing tours, tastings, and more. CopperSea.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, practicing cosmetic plastic surgery, now offering red carpet facials to help prep skin for holidays. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for more. In Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar. Offering wild bird seed, feeders, houses, heated baths, and de-icers. Announcing holiday open house this Saturday from 10 to 5. WildBirdJunction.com.
Birds on Vox Pop today. Rich Guthrie is here. Tom Lake is here. 800-348-2551. Rich, what's coming up in your calendar?
Well, this is the beginning of the whole new season, and many of the bird clubs throughout the area are getting into their winter birdwatching mode, from backyard feeders to field trips to Christmas bird counts and a great backyard bird count and the waterfowl census. All those things are right down the pike as far as the bird community is concerned. Just a couple of notes, though, that with the weather that we had today is a sort of weather that brings in what we would think of as the good stuff. The rarities will come blown in from who knows where. And high on that list is surprisingly enough, the hummingbirds. Hummingbirds be showing up at people's, if they still have a hummingbird feeder out, which I still encourage, you may find a hummingbird out there. And if you do, we sure do want to hear about it. Either through eBird, the Cornell website that you can report your sightings, eBird.org, or sending me an email at my email address. And already this year, we had a fellow over in Kinderhook, New York, send me an email that he had a hummingbird. He believed it to be a rufous hummingbird, but it takes some real detailed detective work to find out. And sure enough, he had a rufous hummingbird coming to his bird feeder. There's possibility of others coming in from the far west or far northwest that it get blown to the east, and happens every other winter or so. Just a couple of the bird notes. I want to say that in Pittsfield, this coming weekend, Saturday the 17th, at the Berkshire School, there's going to be the fourth annual Berkshire Natural History Conference, and you can check with the HoffmanBirdClub.org to find out the details on that. It's Berkshire County in Massachusetts and adjacent areas of Vermont and New York for those folks that are interested.
And Tom, 25 years for the Hudson River Almanac.
Yeah, it's been a long time. As the editor of the Almanac, it's my weekly job to compile and get it out to about 20,000 people now. It's a weekly natural history journal. It's sent out as an email with photographs, and it contains the stories and adventures and observations of everybody. Anybody who sends me an email with a story to tell. Rich frequently sends me terrific mm-hmm. observations, mostly about birds. But people can get the Hudson River Almanac. It's free. It's a weekly email. My email address, if you want to email me, I'll put you on our list. It's trlake, L-A-K-E, 7@AOL.com.
800-348-2551 is our number. And let's talk to David in Ballston Lake. David.
Thank you. Thank you, Rich and Tom. My call is about great horned owls.
Mm-hmm.
We live in former agricultural land in Saratoga County that is now heavily subdivided by human residences and driveways. And great horned owl was here 30 years ago in former ag land and our forest, which we try to keep wild. But it's now back, despite the heavy subdivision that's happened since then. And both male and female, I think one is lower pitch and one is higher pitch. And they're both hooting actively and passing through the area. And I see them flying at night as well. What explains their habitat preferences?
Well, the great horned owl, first of all, is right about now pair bonding and setting up their winter territory in anticipation of nesting, which they actually start doing very early in the year, in the middle of winter. So it's very serious business for them. And also, they're kicking the kids out. The kids have been hanging around, and it's this time of year that the kids got to get up and go, find their own territory. And then they're out there looking for a companion, a mate, to spend the winter months with as well. So they're hooting back and forth. The great horned owl, a wonderful sound. It goes, hoo, 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 hoo. And you hear that through the night. It's just one of those really calming sounds in my mind through the night hours. They're adaptable. The great horned owl can thrive in suburban situations as long as that there's food. Food is the factor, but they're very secretive and can easily go unnoticed and, as a result, undisturbed. So they get along fine in relatively close proximity to people in backyards in suburban areas.
All right, David, thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551. Let's check in with Paul in Mill River. Paul.
Hi there. I was calling this morning. I saw a great horned, a ringneck pheasant, and very often. And I wondered if they fell into that category of temporary passersby in the spring and the fall.
No, neither. Ringneck pheasants are one of the raise and release birds that people are doing around the state. And at some game farms, they're also raising them to release. So whereabouts are you?
Well, I'm in a very rural area of Berkshire County, outside of Great Barrington, but okay. Mostly large farms.
So, yeah.
You know, not very much population.
Right. It was ringneck pheasant is not native to the area. Years ago, they were stocked by DEC and the Massachusetts Fish and Game Commission, but they don't survive. And so it's my guess is that in your neighborhood, it was probably raised as a project or a pet and then released to the wild. And the likelihood is it will live a long and lonesome life in the woods or fields out there in Berkshire County.
Whenever I find a pheasant, which isn't very frequent, generally there's a gun club somewhere in your area because they're often stocked by gun clubs for their members to go out and hunt.
I see. Okay.
Thank you very much for calling, Paul. It's 800-348-2551. Tom, your grandson is here. He's a big fan of the bald eagle. What about the bald eagle during the winter? Do they hibernate or are they out and flying about?
It's kind of a mixed bag. Some eagles migrate south. As I mentioned, these raptor watches we have in the Hudson Valley, they'll see a couple bald eagles each day, a golden eagle. There's a nest that we've been watching now for 19 years, and the first 10 years of that nest with the adults in it, you wouldn't see them after August or September, and then they come back in February. In the last 8 years or so, it's like they've changed their behavior, and now they stay around. I see them today. We saw them, the pair. They're around, and pretty soon they'll be refurbishing their nest. And this is only one example, but here's they sometimes migrate, sometimes they don't migrate. These seem to hang around. The problem's going to happen to identify local bald eagles is in the next month or so, we'll have an influx from Canada of hundreds of bald eagles. If we get a real winter with a lot of ice, we'll be able to see several hundred bald eagles out on the Hudson River ice all winter long. Some of those will be local birds, like the pair that we've been watching, and others will be from Canada. And these birds travel south in the winter until they find consistently open water, because the eagles, the first thing on their food list would be fish. And if they can't get fish, they'll go for waterfowl. A lot fewer calories burned trying to get a fish than trying to grab a duck and subdue it. Mm-hmm. So they're going to come south. Now, there have been some winters when we've had such a mild winter that many of them did not come south of St. Lawrence River. Then there are years when it's a little colder. They may come down to Lake Champlain. And in a real winter, we'll see them in the mid-Hudson Valley. Albany and Troy will get socked in. And they do need the open water, so they'll travel south. For a week or so a year ago, we had so much ice on the river that if you wanted to see a bald eagle, you had to go down into the upper bay of New York Harbor to find them. There was that much ice on the river. So eagles, I like to remember this, is that eagles were here before we were here. And even though we have a great impact on the environment, the winters come and winters go, and they're severe and they're not so severe. And the eagles have seen it all. There's no winter that an eagle will be presented with they have not figured out a way to handle.
800-348-2551. Lee in Greenwich, go ahead.
Hello, guys. How are you?
Hi. Go right ahead.
Hi. Rich, I usually call in with my usual observations on my favorite bird of prey, and that's the merlin. And with global warming and so forth, I speculate, there's a great many merlins coming into the upper Hudson River Valley. To that end, though, I always thought you had to go to someplace rural to find them with wide open spaces. But I found in my little expeditions, or not-so-expeditions, I find that they're in urban areas. So downtown Albany, I've found two nesting pairs. On Hoosick Street, off of Troy, a successful nesting pair. Saratoga Springs, Glens Falls. So this, I find that this bird, this merlin, that is, accustomed to kind of a Tioga kind of environment, very arboreal environment, has really adapted into urban settings really rapidly and very successfully. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, the merlin, which is a type of falcon, it's a medium sized. They used to call it the pigeon hawk. Between the peregrine falcon and the American kestrel in size. And they have become the new city raptor, the new city hawk. nesting in many cities throughout the Northeast, as well as in the primitive forest areas. So, it's all about adaptation. The Maryland population has expanded and developed its range eastward and southward. So it's an interesting phenomenon. Where it will go from here, I don't know, but definitely have increased in numbers over the course of the last.
Speculate, Rich, it'll go where the food is.
Well, yeah,
they love starling.
It's all about food.
Starlings.
Yeah, but the starling is not new in this area. The starling has been around for 100 years. The Merlins have been here for 20 years. So it's the food has been there. It's the Merlin itself that has increased in numbers and have expanded. You'll see other birds doing it. Another example of that, but not related, but is the sandhill crane. The sandhill crane is a bird of the northern prairies in southern Canada and northwest U.S., Wyoming, Montana, and the like. Now they are nesting in New York. And just this morning, a friend had sent me a note that he saw 15 or more sandhill cranes flying over New Paltz in Ulster County, New York, in the snowstorm. So there is movement going on. A lot of this is the ebb and flow of natural phenomena, a lot of which we try to interpret. We may have been hit the nail on the head, or sometimes it just happens and we accept it as it is.
Yeah, the sandhill cranes are pretty well known for following the Wallkill River Valley down into northern New Jersey. Usually we'll see one out there. Just a note on the falcons, though. If you look in the old Roger Torrey Peterson books, the American Kestrel, among the falcons, the American Kestrel, he refers to it as a sparrowhawk. The Merlin, of course, is, as Rich said, the pigeon hawk, and the peregrine falcon as the duck hawk. And those are good identifiers because it gives you, not necessarily the species, but it gives you a prey size, a preferred prey size of those three falcons.
800-348-2551 is the number to call. That's 800-348-2551. Jim in North Pownell, Vermont. Go ahead, Jim.
What a great show.
Thank you.
I'm concerned about woodcocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to take my daughter out in the backyard, and we would watch the woodcocks do their mating dance, and the male would fly up and fly back down. And it's been probably 5 or 6 years since I saw a woodcock. And I'm just wondering, are they out of here, or what's going on with them?
Well, woodcock, for those, is a type of sandpiper, actually, that has given up the sandy beaches and has taken up a lifestyle in the wood, the forest floor. And as such, they blend in very well with the leaf litter of the forest. They're very brown, mottled brown in appearance. They have a very long bill that they use for probing down into the mud earthworms and the like. But it's all about habitat and food. And I suspect that there's probably been some habitat changes in your neck of the woods. As far as I know, the woodcock numbers are still holding well. So as with some of the bird species, if the fields become too shrubby or too crowded, or if they're overworked, or too much degree of disturbance, they're going to move on and find a new place to nest. So I don't think the woodcock is having the trouble, let's say, as the whippoorwill is having. The good way to find woodcock in the spring is to listen on a good mild evening, driving down the backcountry roads with the window open and listening for their call, which is very short but travels well. It goes something like, meep.
Meep. Yeah.
Meep. And so if you if you do find a meadow, a wet meadow where they're calling, the chances are they're going to go through that magnificent courtship dance of theirs that you.
Yeah. Well, I own the meadow that they used to be, you know, mm-hmm. doing their thing about, mm-hmm. and it's been a long time since they've been here, and I don't know why.
That's interesting. I don't have a good explanation for that for you.
Jim, you must love their nickname, Timberdoodle.
Timberdoodles, absolutely.
I'm not sure they love that nickname, but
well, they fit the description. That's what they do. They're in the woods and they go timber doodling up in the air. Marvelous, marvelous aerial display dance that they do.
Thank you for calling. Let's talk now to Nancy in Stormville. Bears at the bird feeder. Hi, Nancy.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, I put up a bird feeder that has been on the property for a while, but I just put it up for this winter on a wooden pane fence. And then we noticed in the morning, that very same morning, that it was ripped open. The bird feeder was on the ground, ripped off the post, and then it went over to our other bird feeder. It's only like 12 feet from the window here, and he ripped off the suet, took it to the other side of the yard, and ate it.
Sounds like a bear to me.
Yeah. Anything you can
do?
Yeah,
that's what my So we're wondering. So when do I know that the bears aren't going to be out anymore?
As soon as you come out in the morning and your bird feeders are still there.
It's true. You know, we have to remember, whenever people get all angst about black bears and their feeders, it's the risk you take. And I always remind myself, the bears were here before our feeders were here. And if you think about it that way, you have a little more patience with them.
Well, the thing is, be very careful. If the bears are still around, you don't want to be attracting them to your yard. I would think that the bears are about hibernated by now. This is the kind of weather that sends them scurrying. So, Maya, whereabouts are you again?
Stormville.
Stormville.
Down in Southern Dutchess County.
Yeah, understood. Well, folks, down that way, maybe a little later, but up this way, the bears are pretty well gone to bed. So hold out a little bit, and if you do have some bird feeders, put them out of reach of anywhere that a bear might reach, in a clothesline or on a string from a tree. But until then, be careful with the bears.
Bears are constantly inventing new ways, though, to get at your feeders. Amazing stories of what they'll go through just to get some sunflower seeds.
And across the region, the bear-human encounters have been growing rapidly in recent years.
The bear numbers are increasing. So.
And they're losing their timidity to...
That's for sure.
Yeah. 800-348-2551. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMZ comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom display fabrication, interactive exhibits, and rental gallery walls for special events, museum exhibitions, and trade shows nationwide. EmpireExhibits.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. The Preservation League of New York State, protecting the Erie Canal legacy and its teaching tug urger, petition available online, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Christmas Story by Philip Grecian, weekends December 7th through December 16th at Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Nine Pin Cider Works Albany, featuring hard cider made from local apples, now serving pizza, light fare, beer, wine, and spirits in tasting room, open Tuesday through Sunday, ninepincider.com.
This is Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie, Tom Lake, and your phone calls all about birds. Lynn in Shelburne, Massachusetts. Lynn?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question concerning a couple springs back, and I'm wondering if there's some kind of change in the climate here in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. I had so many bluebirds and so many orioles, and I was told to hang the oriole feeder over my quince bush, which I did, and I did enjoy it. But I haven't seen them since. Was there anything special about a couple springs ago?
Can't say as I recall there has been. I don't understand. First of all, you hung what over the quince bush?
A feeder for the orioles.
Oh, well, here's the thing: orioles are not not prone to be feeder birds. They have to be educated to come to a feeder. It's not like the chickadees and nuthatches that are drawn to feeders. Orioles, typically not, and so I'm not surprised that an oriole is not coming to your feeder. It's the odd one that is. You get one that does, but like the like some of the other birds, they have to learn. And once they do, they're hooked. And if something happens to that individual oriole, then you have a whole new generation of orioles that have to learn about the feeder.
I see.
There are oriole feeders you can get.
Yeah, but they don't work.
They don't.
They work rarely. But it's a good. It sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. What about the bluebirds? Did anything happen a couple of springs ago that would have stopped them from coming after that?
Not really. They again, it's all about food, and bluebirds are not feeder birds for the most part. So,
no, I said the mealworms.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Well, again, you'll need some bluebirds to know that. And I suspect that the bluebird group that you had back then has moved on and found in another area, or that population has diminished. So I would recommend putting out bird boxes for the bluebirds. They work very, very well. And
at what height?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Shoulder high. Let's just say... Oh. And clear of nearby bushes and shrubs in an open area, let's say on a fence post or on a pillar of some sort.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. It's 800, it's 348-2551. We have an email from Doug. Does the low-spectrum background noise disturb an owl's hunting? We can hear oil trains from far away. It seems likely that it would interfere. Does some of that background noise, the cars, the trucks, the trains, disturb owls?
Probably not. Probably not, because owls do hunt by sound. They're very effective at doing that, but they have very directional hearing apparatus. Their ears, first of all, they're very sensitive. They can hear. They can find food in virtual darkness, in total darkness, or darn near. And they do that by sound. And the facial discs and muscles of the owls will bring sounds directly into the ears. So it's very directional food finding.
And Tom, how about this email for you? This writer says that the birds have disappeared from his feeders. Last Sunday he was out. He saw a huge red-tailed hawk sitting in the tree over his head. Should I stop feeding the birds until I don't see the hawk for a while? Is that hawk just waiting for his prey to?
Well, typically, and Rich could correct me on this, typically red-tailed hawks are not bird hawks, although in certain environments, for example, in New York City, in Manhattan, they've been known to go after pigeons and other birds. But normally I would be worried if it was a Cooper's hawk or a sharp-shinned hawk, I'd be a little more concerned. But my initial thought is that a red-tailed hawk is probably not worrying about chickadees and titmice. What do you think, Rich?
He's waiting there for the mice to come out to pick up the scraps from the ground. Yeah. So he's drawn there probably because of the mice and chipmunks.
So the birds are safe, but the mice, no.
From the red-tailed hawk. Yeah. Though, you know, birds will be intimidated by the presence of a red-tailed hawk, yeah. But it's not the real threat. This morning I just had one of those occipital hawks, a sharp shin hawk, come in and raid my bird feeders in the backyard. And I says, help yourself. Leave my chickadees alone, but help yourself.
We have a lot of squirrels under my feeders. After a while, the birds get very sloppy.
And
there's a lot on the ground. And that certainly would be attractive to a red-tailed hawk, the squirrels.
Okay, let's talk to – hello. Hi, Mike. Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, this is Mike. Yeah, hi. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
Last 3 weeks, we noticed no crows around, both at Glenville and also some neighbors in the Pine Bush area. I wondered if there was something done in the environment or anything that might have discouraged them from being around.
I'm glad you brought that up. I've noticed the same thing. In fact, to me, it's a matter of concern. I don't know what's happening with the crows. We used to have, in my neighborhood, a regular group of 50 to 100 crows that would come in each evening and make a pilgrimage flying across the river over my house to a woodlot west of me. And then I think what they did was moved on. They used it as a staging area. And that did not happen this year. My neighbors noticed it as well. Now, I don't know what's going on with the crows. This winter, we'll be doing the Audubon Society. We'll be doing the Christmas bird count. And we'll be getting a comparative number of crows and other bird species throughout the area. So we'll be able to document what seems to be intuitively or anecdotally something going on with the crows. I don't have an answer for that. It's something going on, but it may be a natural phenomenon with the crows, just the ebb and flow of populations.
Where do you live, Mike?
Scotia.
Okay, and Glenville. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I live down in Dutchess County, and the Poughkeepsie waterfront has been famous for their night roosts for wintertime crows. And the night roost there typically has been a mile long and contained 10,000 crows, maybe even more than that. And that ought to be, if the crows are, in fact, still here in numbers, that ought to start developing in the next few weeks to a month or so. And I'm going to have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, okay. Like I said, I just wondered if it was something in the environment or...
It could very well be.
Maybe a new cell tower or radar or something at the airports or something that's bothering them. Or...
Not likely, but we'll find out. First, we got to get the evidence together.
800-348-2551. Birds and airports don't mix usually, do they?
Well, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
It's just management. Birds will be drawn to airports, and it's part of the open field complex.
Let's talk to Audrey in Western Massachusetts. Audrey.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So you may have just addressed this when you were referring to red-tailed hawks not being interested in birds as prey. But so we have chickens. We live out in Western Mass in a hill town, and we get a lot of, I think they're red-tailed hawks. That's the only variety I'm familiar with. They look about the same size. We get a lot of the juveniles around our property and just around town. Sometimes I'll have four or five of them all in the tree line around my property calling. And sometimes I get pretty good-sized ones sitting on the branch that hangs right above the chicken run. And so my question is about is I'm just wondering how much space a hawk would be willing to go into. So I have 8-foot-tall fences around, and then the chicken coop is a large structure inside of that fencing. So there's not really a lot of sort of open space for them to go down and come out of. So I feel like that deters them. But I'm just wondering if maybe I have anything to be worried about, if I should, put some sort of crossbars or something like that to make it less accessible for them, or if they're just curious.
Well, you got a dilemma there. what you're doing is setting out a dinner table for the predators. And the red-tailed hawk will probably not be the one drawn to chickens, but the Cooper's hawk and especially the goshawk will be very comfortable helping themselves to one or two. And what they do, and small spaces do not deter them. They're capable of flying in very tight spaces and maneuvering very well. So I would put a chicken wire over the top of your chicken run. If that's possible. Other than that, what's going to happen is chicken hawks, as they're referred to, are known for doing that. So you've got a challenge on your hands there.
In the famous cartoon, Charlie Chicken Hawk and Foghorn Leghorn, you might remember that.
I
sure
do.
Yeah. Charlie Chicken Hawk was probably a Cooper's hawk. But I will mention that I'm an archaeologist, and I was working on a site in Orange County about 10 years ago. And right during the work we were doing, excavating, terrific noise, all kinds of sounds. We turn around and look, and the farmer had a chicken coop, and a red-tailed hawk was caught inside the chicken coop and couldn't get out. And the hawk itself wasn't too frantic, but the chickens were going crazy.
Yeah, and the chicken hawk in those old cartoons, this tiny little guy with a big attitude. Is that what they're like?
Yeah, Cooper's hawk, I don't know. They have an attitude like that.
They're the boss.
One little follow-up for that before I let you guys go.
Sure.
So if the structure that I have set up won't hold, like, the hardware net or chicken wiring like that, do you think just that sort of soft plastic bird netting over top? I mean, they're not going to get themselves tangled in that willingly, right?
Well, it depends on how soft. They're going to come down talons first, and
so that might be a disaster.
You might have your hands full. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for calling. Let's move on to Beverly in Amherst. Beverly.
Good afternoon. I'm calling with a question. How do I attract birds to an area where they haven't been before? I put up a feeder for cardinals and one for woodpeckers, the pine cone with the peanut butter and a small feeder with safflower and black oilers near the edge of a wood in a very populated area. But nobody's come yet. They've been up about a week.
Oh,
and
that's,
I'm just wondering
how
to bring them in, because there's nothing there to attract them besides the fear.
You've done what you can. And then the rest is patience. And once they find you, they'll watch one another. Birds travel around in small groups, looking and learning from what the others in the group are finding. And once they've got your number, they'll be back.
Do they follow squirrels at all?
Probably not.
What the squirrels are doing?
Maybe not. They're more interested in themselves, and they're more maneuverable than the squirrels. But if you've got squirrels there, then the birds will be curious to find out what the menu is.
Okay, because there are established bird feeders in the area, but nothing in this particular, 20, 30, 40 feet.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
It's just a matter of time. They'll be there. I guarantee you.
800-348-2551. Time for a few more calls on Vox Pop as we talk birds with Diane in Elizaville. Diane, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. I was hoping you could help me identify an empty bird nest. I found it when I was trimming my yew, and I have not been able to locate any good material, like a website or something, to help me identify it. They all want to identify it by the eggs, and clearly there's no eggs in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a round cup made of mud, but with grasses holding it all together. The grasses are wrapped horizontally around the cup.
Well, I can tell you right off the bat.
In diameter.
I can tell you right off the bat. As soon as you mention mud, the one bird that nests in that kind of nest that uses mud will be the robin. And
when I look up, when I Googled it, it didn't show any nests like that. So it would be a robin.
Okay. Some of the swallows build, in fact, many of them build, but they won't nest in a bush. So I'm going to go back to the robin, and I'll recommend that there is a book. One of the Peterson Field Guides is Birds and Nests of Eastern North America. Roger Torrey Peterson Field Guide to the Nests, Birds and Nests of Eastern North America. Perhaps your library has a copy of that, but there you'll find illustration of all the potential nests that might be.
Okay, I had one more question about the nest.
Sure.
In the bottom of the cup, embedded in the mud, but very easy to see, is about a half of an inch roundish stone. And it just looks way too big for any bird to carry in its beak, but clearly it did. And I was curious about that. Is that common or uncommon?
I haven't heard of such a thing. So somehow that stone got in there. Not likely that a half inch, that's a bit large for a robin to carry for any reason. And I don't have...
Possibly a little smaller, but it's not a tiny, tiny thing.
Okay. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to maybe, well, I can't even suggest a squirrel or chipmunk dropped it in there, because there'd be no reason for anybody, any of those critters, to be carrying a stone around. So I have no answer for that.
Just a few minutes left. Tom, some final thoughts in an email?
I was thinking, as we're talking about these birds migrating, and it's a very obvious migration of songbirds and raptors and vultures, and we're kind of at the tail end of all that. And the other migration, which really goes largely unseen, is in the Hudson River right now. We're in the tail end of a huge seaward migration of fish that were born here this past spring. Millions and tens of millions and maybe hundreds of millions of these fish. And some of the birds we're talking about, like eagles and osprey, are feeding on those fish.
Rich.
Oh, just this is the time of the year. The leaves are off. The birds are coming in. Fill the feeders. Keep an eye out and report to ebird.org, and let us know.
Let's squeeze in one more call. Donna in Woodstock. Go ahead.
Hi. I worry about the suet and I've thought about this with mealworms, but especially the suet, because sprays go to the fat. And does eating maybe unorganic suet affect the birds?
Probably not. The amounts that they'll be taking in are so minuscule, and there are so many other sources for their diet that I wouldn't issue that as a concern.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. And maybe one more call. Tim wants to know about a book. Rich, Tim in Ballston Spa, go ahead.
Yeah, Rich, I have a pair of books from the Conservation Department, copyrighted 1908. And they have a lot of color. They have probably 100 pages of census information. It looks like one heck of a PhD project. But I'm wondering if you happen to know what I'm talking about and if you have it.
Well, I've seen them. That's the Conservation Commission publications put out back in the turn of the last century. Sources of a wealth of information.
You didn't write it, did you, back then?
I'm not that old.
We're out of time. I want to thank all of those folks who called in and apologize to Renee, John, Patricia, Devin, and Sharon, who were left on the lines. Big thanks to Rich Guthrie and Tom Lake for joining us. Support for WAMC comes from Penny Farthing, Socially Responsible Investment Management, Amherst, Massachusetts. Advising families on college selection and financial aid, Eric Bright, CFA, brightpenny.org. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. Windy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts, conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care and health services since 1998, windyhollowvet.com. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop this afternoon. Our engineer, Zach Malloy. Thanks to Carol Lapani for answering the phones. Jim Lavoulis is the producer. I'm Brian Shields. Tomorrow, a very special show all about trains. Stay tuned now for a news update.